But fear, because the longer the internet was down, the more I was starting to think that someone was deliberately trying to stop me from accessing the web. And that was starting to make me feel very worried indeed. The door to cabin one, no bell, was the same anonymous white wood as the rest of the cabin doors, but you could tell from the fact that it was by itself in the prow of the boat, with a blank expanse of corridor stretching away behind us, that it must be something pretty special. I knocked cautiously. I'm not sure what I expected, Richard Bulmer, or perhaps even a maid, neither would have surprised me, but I was thrown completely when the door opened and Anne Bulmer was standing there. She had clearly been crying. Her dark eyes were rimmed with red and circled with deep shadows, and there were traces of tears still on her gaunt cheeks. I blinked, completely losing the thread of the carefully prepared request I'd rehearsed in my head. Phrases skittered through my mind, each more inappropriate and impossible than the other. "Are you okay? What's wrong? Is there anything I can do?" I said none of them, just gulped. "Yes," she said, with a touch of defiance. She brought up a corner of her silk robe and wiped at her eyes, and then put her chin up. "Can I help you?" I swallowed again, and then said, "Yes, I hope so. I'm sorry for intruding. You must be tired after the spa morning." "Not particularly," she said, rather shortly. I bit my lip. Maybe referring to her illness hadn't been tactful. "I was actually hoping to speak to your husband."
"Richard? He's busy, I'm afraid. Is it something I can help with?"
I don't think so," I said awkwardly, and then wondered whether to make my excuses and leave, or stay and explain. I felt bad disturbing her, but it seemed equally wrong to knock and then leave so abruptly. Part of my discomfort was the tears. Should I leave her to her private grief or stay and offer comfort? But it was also because I found her gaunt, smooth face so unsettling. She seemed so unassailable in every other way. To see someone like Anne Bulmer, so privileged, with every advantage that money could buy, the latest medicine, the best doctors and treatments available, to see her fighting for her life like this before our very eyes was almost unbearable. I wanted to run away, but that knowledge forced me to stand my ground.
"Well, I'm sorry," she said. "Perhaps it can wait until later. Can I tell him what it's about?"
I twisted my fingers together. What could I possibly say? There was no way I was spilling my suspicions to this frail, haunted-looking woman.
He promised me an interview," I said, remembering his throwaway words after dinner.
It was kind of half-true, after all.
"He told me to come to the cabin this afternoon." "Oh," her face cleared. "I am sorry.
He must have forgotten.
I think he's gone to the hot tub with Lars and a few others. Hopefully you can catch him at dinner."
I had no intention of waiting that long, but I didn't say that, just nodded.
"Will we see you at dinner?" I asked, and cringed at the way I was stumbling over my words. "For God's sake, she's ill, not a leper." She nodded. "I hope so. I'm feeling a little better today. I get very tired, but it seems like a capitulation to let my body win too often." "Are you still undergoing treatment?" I asked.
She shook her head, the soft silk scarf around her skull rustling as she did.
"Not at the moment. I finished my last round of chemotherapy, for now, anyway. I'll undergo radiotherapy when we get back, and then I suppose we'll see."
"Well, best of luck," I said, and then winced at the way the innocent remark seemed to make her survival into a kind of game of chance.
And, thanks.
No problem at all.
She shut the door, and I turned to walk back towards the stairs to the upper deck, feeling my face burn with a kind of shame. I had never been to the hot tub, but I knew where it should be, on the top deck above the Lindgren lounge, just outside the spa. I made my way up the thickly carpeted stairs towards the restaurant deck, expecting that feeling of light and space that I'd had before, but I'd forgotten the mist. When I got to the door that opened onto the deck, a wall of grey greeted me behind the glass, blanketing the ship in its folds so you could barely see from one end of the deck to the other, giving a strange, muffled feeling. The mist had brought a chill to the air, fogging the hairs on my arms with drizzle, and as I stood uncertainly in the lee of the doorway, shivering and trying to get my bearings, I heard the long, mournful boom of a foghorn. The whiteness made everything seem unfamiliar, and it took me a few minutes to work out where the stairs to the top deck were, but eventually I realized they must be to my right, further up towards the prow of the boat. I couldn't imagine anyone enjoying a jacuzzi in this weather, and for a moment I wondered if Ann Bulmer had been mistaken. But as I rounded the glassed-in tip of the restaurant, I heard laughter and looked up to see lights glowing in the mist above my head, coming from the deck above. Seemingly, there were people mad enough to strip down, even in this cold. I wished I had brought a coat, but there was no sense going back for one, so I wrapped my arms around myself and climbed the slippery, vertiginous steps to the upper deck, following the sound of voices and laughter. There was a glass screen halfway along the deck, and when I slipped round it, there they were. Lars, Chloe, Richard Bulmer, and Cole, seated in the most enormous jacuzzi I'd ever seen. It must have been 8 or 10 feet across, and they were leaning back against the sides with just their shoulders and heads showing, the steam rising so densely from the bubbling water that it was hard for a moment to see who was in there.
"Miss Blacklock!"
Richard Bulmer called heartily, his voice carrying easily above the roaring of the jets.
"Have you recovered from last night?"
He stuck out a tanned, muscular arm, steaming and goosebumped in the cold air, and I shook his dripping hand and then wrapped my arms back around myself, feeling the warmth of his grip fade immediately and the chill of the wind on my now damp hands.
"Come for a dip?" Chloe asked with a laugh, waving an inviting hand at the rolling cauldron of bubbles.
"Thanks," I shook my head, trying not to shudder, "but it's a bit cold."
"It's warmer in here, I can tell you."
Bulmer gave a wink.
"Hot jacuzzi, cold shower."
He indicated an open-sided shower to one side of the jacuzzi. A vast rainwater shower rose poised above the tray. There was no temperature control, just a steel push button with a blue centre, and the sight made me shudder involuntarily.
"And then straight into the sauna."
He jerked a thumb at a wooden cabin tucked behind the glass screen. Craning my head round, I could see a glass door streaming with condensation, and through the trickling runnels, the red glow of a brazier.
"Then rinse and repeat as many times as your heart can stand it."
"It's not really my cup of tea," I said awkwardly.
"Don't knock it till you've tried it,"
Cole said. He grinned, showing his pointed incisors.
"I have to say, jumping out of the sauna into the cold shower was a pretty incredible experience. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?"
I flinched. "Thanks, but I think I won't."
"Suit yourself,"
Chloe smiled. She stretched out a languorous arm, dripping water onto Cole's camera, which was resting on the floor below, and picked up a frosted glass of champagne from a little table placed alongside the tub.
"Look."
I took a deep breath and spoke directly to Lord Bulmer, trying to ignore the watching, interested faces of the others.
"Lord Bulmer."
"Call me Richard,"
he interrupted. I bit my lip and nodded, trying to keep my thoughts in order. Richard, I was hoping to talk to you about something, but I'm not sure if now is the right time. Could I come and see you later, in your cabin?
Why wait?
Bulmer shrugged.
One thing I've learned in business, now almost always is the right time. What feels like prudence is almost invariably cowardice, and someone else gets in there before you.
Well, I said, and then stopped, unsure what to do. I really didn't want to speak in front of the others. The someone gets there before you part certainly wasn't reassuring.
Have a glass of something, Bulmer said.
He pressed a button on the rim of the jacuzzi, and a girl appeared silently out of nowhere. It was Ulla.
Yes, sir, she said politely.
Champagne for Miss Blacklock.
Certainly, sir. She melted away. I took a deep breath. There was no alternative. No one could divert the boat except Bulmer, and if I didn't do this now, I might never get the chance. Better to speak now with an audience than risk... I dug my nails into my palm, refusing to think about that possibility. I opened my mouth.
Stop digging,
hissed the voice inside my head, but I forced myself to speak.
Lord Bulmer? Richard?
Richard, I don't know if you've spoken to your head of security, Johan Nielsen. Have you seen him today?
Nielsen? No.
Bulmer frowned.
He reports to the captain, not to me. Why do you ask?
Well, I began, but I was interrupted by Ulla appearing at my elbow with a tray holding a champagne glass and a bottle in an ice bucket. Thanks, I said uncertainly. I wasn't sure I wanted to drink right now, not after Nielsen's biting comments earlier, and on top of the hangover from last night, and it seemed an incongruous accompaniment to what I was about to say. But I felt again the impossibility of my position. I was Bulmer's guest and Velocity's representative, and I was supposed to be impressing all these people with my professionalism and dazzling them with my charm. And instead, I was about to hurl the very worst of all possible accusations at his staff and guests. The least I could do was to accept his champagne with good grace. I took the glass, sipping tentatively at it as I tried to get my thoughts in order. It was sour and made me shiver, and I almost pulled a face before realizing how rude that would appear to Bulmer. This is difficult.
Nielsen?
Bulmer prompted.
You were asking if I'd spoken to him.
Yes. Well, last night I had to phone him. I heard noises coming from the cabin next to mine. Number 10, I said, and then stopped. Richard was listening, but so were the other three, rather avidly in Lars's case. Well, since I didn't have a choice, maybe I could turn that to my advantage. I cast a quick look round the circle of faces, trying to gauge their reactions, check for any trace of guilt or anxiety. Out of the three, Lars's moist red lips were curled in a disbelieving scepticism, and Chloe's green eyes were wide with frank curiosity. Only Cole was looking worried.
Palmgren, yes?
Bulmer said. He was frowning, puzzled as to where this was leading.
I thought that one was empty. Solberg cancelled, didn't he?
I went to the veranda, I said, gaining momentum. I glanced around the listeners again. And when I looked out, there was no one there, but there was blood on the glass safety barrier.
Good Lord,
Lars said. He was openly grinning now, not even trying to hide his disbelief.
It's like something out of a novel.
Was he deliberately trying to undermine my account, throw me off balance, or was this just his normal manner? I couldn't tell.
Go on,
Lars said with something close to sarcasm.
I'm on tenterhooks to find how this turns out.
Your security guard let me in, I said to Richard, my voice harder now and speaking fast. But the cabin was empty, and the blood on the glass had been... There was a chink and a splash, and I stopped. We all turned and looked at Cole, who was holding something over the side of the jacuzzi. His hand was dripping blood, running down his fingers onto the pale wooden decking.
I'm okay, I think, he said unsteadily. I'm sorry, Richard. I don't know how, but I knocked my champagne over and...
He held out a handful of blood-stained shards. Chloe gulped and squeezed her eyes shut.
Oh!
Her face was greenish-white.
Oh, God! Lars!
Richard put down his glass, heaved himself out of the jacuzzi, his near-naked body steaming in the cold air, and grabbed a white robe from a pile on the bench. For a moment, he said nothing, just looked dispassionately at Cole's hand streaming blood onto the deck, and glanced at Chloe, who appeared close to fainting. Then he issued a series of orders like a surgeon barking out commands in an operating theatre.
Cole, for God's sake, put down that pile of glass. I'll ring for Ulla to get you cleaned up. Lars, take Chloe off to lie down. She's gone white as chalk. Give her a Valium if that's what it takes. Eva has access to the medical supplies. And Miss Blacklock...
He turned to me and then paused, seeming to weigh his words very carefully as he belted the robe around himself.
Miss Blacklock, please take a seat in the restaurant, and when I've sorted this mess out, we'll run through what you actually saw and heard.
Chapter 20. By the end of the next hour, I could see why Richard Bulmer had got where he was in life. He didn't just take me through my story, he grilled me on every single word, pinning me down on times, specifics, winkling out details I thought I didn't even know, like the exact shape of the blood spatter on the glass screen and the way it was smeared rather than sprayed across the surface. He didn't fill in any gaps with speculation, didn't try to lead me on or persuade me on details I wasn't sure of. He just sat and fired questions at me between sips of scalding black coffee, his blue eyes very bright. What time? How long? When was that? How loud? What did she look like? As he spoke, the slight Mockney overlay to his speech vanished, and the intonation became pure old Etonian, and 100% business. He was utterly focused, his attention on my story absolute, and without a trace of emotion in his face. If someone had been walking along the deck outside and glanced in the window, they would never have known that I had just told him something that could deal a sucker punch to his business, and revealed the presence of a possible psychopath on board a small ship. As my story unfolded, I was expecting echoes of Nielsen's distress or the clannish denial of the stewardesses, but although I watched Bulmer's face carefully, I saw neither of those, no hint of accusation or censure. We might have been trying to solve a crossword for all the emotion he displayed, and I couldn't help being a little impressed by his stoicism, though it felt strange to be on the receiving end of it. It had not been pleasant dealing with Nielsen's scepticism and upset, but it did at least feel a very human reaction. With Bulmer, I couldn't tell what he was feeling. Was he furious or panicked and simply hiding it well? Or was he really as cool and calm as he seemed? Perhaps, I thought, as he ran me through the conversation I'd had with the girl again, this sang-froid was simply what it took to accomplish what he had. Pulling himself up by his bootstraps to a position dealing with hundreds of jobs and millions of pounds of investment. At last, when we had gone through my account backwards, forwards and sideways, and I had no more details to contribute, Bulmer sat for a moment, his head bowed, his brows knitted, thinking. Then he looked briefly at the Rolex on his tanned wrist and spoke.
Thank you, Miss Blacklock. I think we've got as far as we can, and I can see the staff will want to start laying the table for dinner in a moment. I'm sorry. This has clearly been a very distressing and frightening experience for you.
If you'll give me permission, I'd like to discuss it with Nielsen and Captain Larsen to make sure that everything is being done that possibly can be. And perhaps we could meet first thing tomorrow to discuss the next steps. In the meantime, I very much hope you will be able to relax enough to enjoy the dinner that's coming, and the rest of the evening, in spite of what's happened.
What will the next step be? I asked. I understand we're heading to Trondheim, but is there anywhere closer we could stop? I feel like I should report this to the police as soon as possible.
It's possible there might be somewhere closer than Trondheim, yes,
Bulmer said, getting to his feet.
But we'll be there early tomorrow morning, so it might be that it's still the best place to head for. If we stop somewhere in the middle of the night, I think our chances of finding an open police station might be slim. But I'll have to speak to the captain to find out what the most appropriate course of action would be. The Norwegian police may not be able to act if the incident took place in British or international waters. It's a question of legal jurisdiction, you understand, not their willingness to investigate. It will all depend.
And if it did, what if we were in international waters?
The boat is registered in the Cayman Islands. I'll have to speak to the captain about how that might affect the situation.
I felt a sinking in my stomach. I'd read accounts of investigations on boats registered to the Bahamas and so on. One solitary policeman dispatched from the island to do a cursory report and get the issue off his desk as quickly as possible. And that only where there was a clear case of someone going missing. What would happen in this case, where the only evidence that the girl had even existed was long gone? Still, I felt better for having spoken to Bulmer. At least he seemed to believe me, to take my story seriously, unlike Nielsen.
He held out his hand, taking his leave, and as his piercing blue eyes met mine, he smiled for the first time. It was a curiously asymmetric smile that pulled up one side of his face more than the other, but it suited him, and there was something wryly sympathetic about it.
"There's one other thing you should know," I said abruptly.
Bulmer's eyebrows went up, and he dropped his hand.
"Yes?"
I swallowed. I didn't want to say this, but if he was going to speak to Nielsen, it would come out anyway. It would be better coming from me.
I was drinking the night before it happened, and I also take antidepressants. I have done for several years since I was about 25. I had a breakdown, and Nielsen, I think he felt...
I swallowed again. Bulmer's eyebrows rose even higher.
Are you saying that Nielsen threw doubt on your story because you take medication for depression?
The bluntness of his words made me cringe, but I nodded.
Not in so many words, but yes. He made a comment about medication not mixing well with alcohol, and I think he thought...
Bulmer said nothing. He just regarded me impassively, and I found my words tumbling out, almost as if I were trying to defend Nielsen.
It's just that I was burgled before I came on board the ship. There was a man, he came into my flat and attacked me. Nielsen found out about it, and I think he felt, well, not that I'd made it up, but that I might have overreacted.
I'm deeply ashamed that a member of this boat's staff made you feel that way,
Bulmer said. He took my hand, holding it in a vice-like grip.
Please believe me, Miss Blacklock. I take your account with the utmost seriousness.
Thanks, I said, but that one small word didn't do justice to the relief that someone finally believed me. And not just someone, Richard Bulmer, the Aurora's owner. If anyone had the power to get this sorted, it was him.
As I walked back to my cabin, I pressed my hands to my eyes, feeling them sting with tiredness. And then I felt in my pocket for my mobile to check the time. Almost 5. Where had the time gone?
Automatically, I opened up my emails and forced a refresh, but there was still no connection, and I felt a pang of unease. Surely, surely this outage had gone on too long now. I should have mentioned it to Bulmer, but it was too late now. He had gone, slipping into one of those unsettling concealed exits behind a screen, presumably to talk to the captain or radio land. What if Jude had emailed? Rung, even, though I doubted we'd be close enough to land yet for a signal. Was he still ignoring me? For a minute, I had a sharp flash of his hands on my back, my face against his chest, the feel of his warm T-shirt beneath my cheek. And longing hit me with such force that I almost staggered beneath the weight of it. We would be in Trondheim tomorrow, at least. No one could prevent me from accessing the internet then.
"Lo,"
said a voice from behind me, and I turned to see Ben walking along the narrow corridor. He wasn't a big man, but he seemed to fill it entirely, an Alice in Wonderland trick of the perspective that made the corridor seem to shrink down to nothing, and Ben grow bigger and bigger as he came nearer. "Ben," I said, trying to make my voice convincingly cheerful.
"How did it go?"
He began to walk alongside me towards our cabins.
"Did you see Bulmer?"
"Yes. I think it went okay. He seemed to believe me anyway." I didn't say what I had started thinking after Richard left, which was that he had not got as far as he had by showing all the cards in his hand. I'd come out of the meeting feeling confident and appeased, but as I ran back through his words, I realized he hadn't promised anything. In fact, he hadn't really said anything that could be quoted out of context as unqualified support for my story. There had been a lot of, "if this is true," and "if what you say," nothing very concrete when you came down to it.
"Great news," Ben said.
"Is he diverting the boat?"
"I don't know.
He seemed to think it wouldn't make any difference to divert now, that we'd do better to push on to Trondheim and get there as early as possible tomorrow." We had reached our cabins now, and I pulled my keycard out of my pocket. "God, I hope this dinner isn't another 8-course one tonight," I said wearily as I unlocked and opened my door. "I want to get enough sleep to be coherent for the police in Trondheim tomorrow."
"That's still your plan, then?"
Ben asked. He leaned his hand on the doorframe, preventing me from either leaving or closing the door, though I assumed it wasn't that calculated. "Yes, as soon as the boat docks, I'm going there."
"Doesn't it depend on what the captain says about the boat's position?"
"Probably. I think Bulmer's speaking to him about it now. But regardless, I want to get this on record with someone official, even if they can't investigate." The sooner my words were down in some official file, the safer I'd feel.
"Fair enough,"
Ben said easily.
"Well, whatever happens tomorrow, you've got a clean slate with the police.
Stick to the facts, be clear and unemotional like you were with Bulmer. They'll believe you. You've got no reason to lie." He dropped his arm and took a step back.
"You know where I am if you need me, yeah?"
"Yeah." I gave him a tired smile and was about to shut the door when he put his hand back on the frame so that I couldn't shut it without trapping his fingers.
"Oh, I nearly forgot," he said casually.
"Did you hear about Cole?"
"His hand?" I'd almost forgotten, but it came back to me now with shocking vividness, the slow drip of blood onto the decking, Chloe's greenish face.
"Poor guy. Will he need stitches?" "I don't know, but it's not just that. He managed to knock his camera into the hot tub at the same time. He's beside himself, says he can't understand how he came to leave it so close to the edge."
"You're kidding me?"
"Nope. He reckons the lens will be okay, but the body and the SD card's fucked."
I felt the room shift and move a little, as if everything were going in and out of perspective, and I had a prickling flash of the photo of the girl on the little screen, a photo that was now most likely gone forever.
Hey, Ben said with a laugh. No need to look so doom-laden. He'll have insurance, I'm sure. It's just a shame about the shots. He was showing them to us over lunch. He had some great pics. It was a lovely one of you from last night.
He stopped and put out a hand to touch my chin.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. I jerked my head away from him and then tried to force a convincing smile. I'm just... I don't think I'd go on a cruise again. It's really not suiting me. You know, the sea, the kind of hemmed-inness of it all. I really just want to get to Trondheim now. My heart was hammering, and I couldn't wait for Ben to get his hand off the door and leave. I needed to get my head together, needed to work this out. Do you mind? I nodded at Ben's hand, still resting on the doorframe, and he gave an easy laugh and straightened up.
Sure. Sorry, I shouldn't be gabbing. You probably want to dress for dinner, right?
Right, I said. My voice sounded high and false. Ben moved his hand and I closed the door with an apologetic smile. When he was gone, I slid the deadbolt across and then I slumped down with my back against the wood, drew my knees up to my chest and rested my forehead on my knees, a picture stark in front of my closed lids. It was Chloe, reaching out for her glass of champagne, her arm dripping onto Cole's camera on the deck below. There was no way Cole or anyone else could have knocked that camera in. It wasn't on the rim of the tub. Someone had taken advantage of the kerfuffle surrounding my announcement and the broken glass, and had picked it up from the floor and thrown it in. And I had absolutely no way of knowing who that was. It could have happened at any time, even after we'd all left the deck. It could have been almost any of the guests or staff, or even Cole himself. The room seemed to close around me, stiflingly warm and airless, and I knew I had to get out. On the veranda, the sea mist was still close around the boat, but I took great gulping breaths of the cold air, feeling the freshness fill my lungs, jolting me out of my stupor. I had to think. I felt like I had all the pieces of the puzzle in front of me, that I must be able to put them together if I only tried hard enough, if only my head wasn't aching so much. I leaned over the balcony, just as I had the night before, remembering that moment, the sound of the veranda door sliding stealthily back, the huge smacking splash, shocking in the quiet, the smear of blood across glass. And suddenly, I was absolutely and completely certain that I had not imagined it. None of it. Not the mascara, not the blood, not the face of the woman in cabin 10. Most of all, I had not imagined her. And for her sake, I could not let this drop. Because I knew what it was like to be her. To wake in the night with someone in your room. To feel that utter helpless certainty that something awful was going to happen, with nothing you could do to prevent it. The September night air felt suddenly cold. Very cold. Reminding me how far north we were, almost to the Arctic Circle now. I shivered convulsively. Drawing my phone out of my pocket, I checked the reception one more time, holding it up high as if that would somehow magically improve the signal, but there were no bars. Tomorrow, though. Tomorrow, we would be in Trondheim, and no matter what, I was going to get myself off this boat and straight to the nearest police station.
Chapter 21. Making myself up for dinner that night, I felt like I was applying war paint, lacquering on layer by layer the calm, professional mask that would enable me to get through this. Part of me, a big part, wanted to huddle beneath my duvet. The idea of making small talk with a group of people containing a potential murderer, or eating food served by someone who might have killed a woman last night, that thought was terrifying and utterly surreal. but another, more stubborn part refused to give in. As I applied mascara, borrowed from Chloe, in the bathroom mirror, I found myself searching my reflection for the angry, idealistic girl who'd started her journalism course at uni 15 years ago, remembering the dreams I'd had of becoming an investigative reporter and changing the world. Instead, I had fallen into travel writing at Velocity to pay the bills, and, almost in spite of myself, I'd begun to enjoy it. I'd even started to relish the perks, and to dream of a role like Rowan's running my own magazine. And that was fine. I wasn't ashamed of the writer I'd become. Like most people, I'd taken work where I could find it and tried to do the best I could in that job. But how could I look that girl in the mirror in the eye if I didn't have the courage to go out there and investigate a story that was staring me in the face? I thought of all the women I'd admired reporting from war zones around the world, of people who'd exposed corrupt regimes, gone to prison to protect their sources, risked their lives to get at the truth. I couldn't imagine Martha Gellhorn obeying an instruction to stop digging, or Kate Adey hiding in her hotel room because she was scared of what she might find. Stop digging. The letters on the mirror were etched in my memory. Now, as I finished my makeup with a swipe of lip gloss, I huffed on the mirror and wrote in the steam obscuring my reflection one word. No. Besides, as I shut the bathroom door behind me and put on my evening shoes, a smaller, more selfish part of me was whispering that I was safest in company. No one could harm me in front of a room full of witnesses. I was just straightening my gown when there was a knock on the door. "Who is it?" I called.
"It's Carla, Miss Blacklock."
I opened the door. Carla was outside, smiling with her permanent air of slightly anxious surprise.
"Good evening, Miss Blacklock. I just wanted to remind you that dinner is in 10 minutes, and drinks are being served in the Lindgren Lounge, whenever you wish to join us."
"Thank you," I said, and then, almost on impulse as she turned to go, "Carla?"
"Yes?"
She turned back, her eyebrows raised so that her round face looked almost alarmed.
"Is there something else with which I can help?"
I don't know. It's just..." I took a deep breath, trying to think how to phrase it. "When I came and talked to you earlier today in the staff quarters, I felt like maybe there was something else you could have told me, that perhaps you didn't want to speak in front of Miss Lidman. And I just wanted to say, I'm going into Trondheim tomorrow to talk to the police about what I saw, and if there's anything at all that you wanted to say, now would be a really good time to tell me. I could make sure it was anonymous." I thought again of Martha Gellhorn and Kate Adey, of the kind of reporter I'd once wanted to be. "I'm a journalist," I said as convincingly as I could. "You know that. We protect our sources. It's part of the deal." Carla said nothing, only twisted her fingers together. "Carla?" I prompted. For a moment, I thought there might be tears in her blue eyes, but she blinked them away.
"I don't,"
she said, and then muttered something under her breath in her own language.
"It's okay,"
I said. "You can tell me. I promise it won't go any further. Are you frightened of someone?"
"It is not that," she said miserably. "I am sad because I am sorry for you. Johan is saying that you make it up, that you are, what's the word, paranoid, and that you seek the attention by making up stories. And I don't believe this. I believe you are a good person and that you believe what you say is true." But Miss Blacklock, we need our jobs. If the police say that something bad happened on this boat, no one will want to travel with us. And it may not be so easy to find another job. I need this money. I have a little boy, Eric, at home with my mother. She needs the money that I send back. And just because perhaps someone let a friend use an empty cabin, that doesn't mean she was killed, you know? She turned away. Hang on. I put out a hand towards her arm, trying to stop her going. What are you saying? There was a girl in there? Did someone smuggle her in? I am saying nothing. She pulled her arm out of my grip. I am saying, please, Miss Blacklock, don't make trouble if nothing happened. And then she ran up the corridor, punched the code into the staff door, and was gone. On the way up to the Lindgren Lounge, I found myself replaying the conversation in my head, trying to work out what it meant. Had she seen someone in the cabin, or suspected someone was there? Or was she just torn between her sympathy for me and her fear of what might happen if what I was saying was true? Outside the lounge, I checked my phone surreptitiously, hoping against hope that we might be close enough to land for a signal, but there was still nothing. As I was putting it away in my evening bag, Camilla Lidman glided up. "May I take that for you, Miss Blacklock?" She indicated the bag. I shook my head. "No, thank you." My phone was set to beep when it connected to roaming networks. If a signal did come, I wanted it by my side so I could act immediately.
"Very well. May I offer you a glass of champagne?"
She indicated a tray on a small table by the entrance, and I nodded and took a flute. I knew I should keep a clear head for tomorrow, but one glass for Dutch courage couldn't hurt.
"Just to let you know, Miss Blacklock," she said, "that the talk on the Northern Lights has been cancelled tonight."
I looked at her blankly, realizing that I'd forgotten yet again to check the itinerary.
"There was to have been a presentation on the Northern Lights after dinner," she explained, seeing my expression. "A talk from Lord Bulmer, accompanied by photographs from Mr. Lederer. But unfortunately, Lord Bulmer has been called away to deal with an emergency, and Mr. Lederer has hurt his hand, so it has been rescheduled for tomorrow, after the group returns from Trondheim."
I nodded again and turned to the rest of the room to see who else was missing. Bulmer and Cole were both absent, as Camilla had said. Chloe was not there either, and when I asked Lars, he said she was feeling ill and lying down in her room. Anne was present, although she looked pale, and as she raised her glass to her lips, her robe slipped, showing a deep purple bruise on her collarbone. She saw me glance, then look hastily away, and gave a self-conscious laugh.
"I know, it looks terrible, doesn't it? I tripped in the shower, but I bruise so easily now. It looks worse than it is. It's a side effect of the chemotherapy, unfortunately."
As we took our seats at dinner, I saw Ben motion to the seat next to his, opposite Archer, but I pretended not to see, and instead took the chair closest to where I was standing, next to Owen White. He was giving Tina a long talk on his financial interests and his role at the investment company he worked for. As I listened, half an ear on their conversation, half on the rest of the table, I realized that the talk had shifted, and he was speaking in a low voice, as if unwilling to be overheard.
"Quite honestly, no,"
he was confiding to Tina.
"I'm just not 100% convinced that the setup is sustainable. It's such a niche investment area. But I don't imagine Bulmer will have trouble getting interest from elsewhere. And of course, he has pretty deep pockets of his own. Or rather, Anne does, so he can afford to wait for the right person to come on board. It's a shame Solberg wasn't able to come. This is much more his bailiwick."
Tina nodded wisely, and then the conversation passed on to other topics, holiday destinations they had in common,
the identity of the neon green cubes of jelly that had just appeared on plates in front of us, flanked by little piles of something I thought might be seaweed. I let my gaze pass over the room. Archer was saying something to Ben and laughing uproariously. He looked drunk, his bow tie already askew. Anne, at the same table, was talking to Lars. There was no trace of the tears I'd seen earlier that afternoon, but there was something haunted about her expression, and her smile, as she nodded at something Lars was saying, was strained.
"Pondering our hostess,"
said a low voice from across the table, and I turned to see Alexander sipping at a glass.
"She's quite the enigma, isn't she? Looks so fragile, and yet they say she's the power behind Richard's throne. The iron fist in the silk glove, you could say. I suppose having that kind of money from the age when most children are still drooling into their cornflakes has a steeling effect on one's character."
"Do you know her well?" I asked. Alexander shook his head.
"Never met her. Richard spends half his life on a plane, but she almost never leaves Norway. It's totally alien to me. As you know, I live for travel. I can't imagine confining yourself to a petty little country like Norway when the restaurants and capitals of the world await. Never to taste suckling pig at El Bulli, or sample the glorious fusion of cultures that is Gagan in Bangkok. But I suppose it's a reaction against her upbringing. I believe she lost her parents in a plane crash at the age of 8 or 9, and spent the rest of her childhood being shuttled around the boarding schools of Europe by her grandparents. I imagine you might choose to go the other way as an adult."
He picked up his fork, and we were just starting to eat when there was a noise at the door, and I looked up to see Cole walking unsteadily across to the table.
"Mr. Lederer,"
a stewardess hurried to take an extra chair from the ones at the side of the room.
"Miss Blacklock, might I ask you to just..."
I moved my plate and chair slightly, and she put a seat at the head of the table for Cole, who slumped heavily down. His hand was bandaged, and he looked as if he'd been drinking.
"No, I won't have champagne,"
he said in answer to Hanny gliding up with a tray.
"I'll have a scotch."
Annie nodded and hurried away, and Cole sat back in his chair and passed a hand over his unshaven face.
"Sorry about your camera," I said cautiously.
He scowled, and I saw that he was very drunk already.
"It's a fucking nightmare," he said, "and the worst of it is, it's my own bloody fault. I should have backed up."
"Are all the shots gone?" I asked. Cole shrugged.
"No idea, but probably yes. Got a guy back in London who might be able to get some of the data off, but it's showing fuck all when I put it in my computer. It's not even reading the card."
"I'm really sorry," I said. My heart was beating fast. I wasn't sure if this was sensible, but I figured I had nothing to lose now. "Was it just stuff from the voyage? I thought I saw one shot from somewhere else."
"Oh, yeah. I was swapping the cards over. It had a few shots from a shoot I did a couple of weeks back at the Magellan."
I knew the Magellan. It was a very exclusive all-male members club in Piccadilly, founded as a meeting place for diplomats and what the club described as gentlemen travellers. No women were allowed as members, but female guests were permitted, and I had attended functions there once or twice in Rowan's stead.
"Are you a member?" I asked.
He gave a snort.
"Not bloody likely. Not my style, even if they'd let me in, which is doubtful. Too crusty for my taste. Anywhere that won't let you wear jeans isn't my bag. The front line is more my cup of tea. Alexander's a member, though. So is Bulmer, I think. You know the drill, you have to be either too posh to function or rich as shit. Unfortunately, I'm not either."
His last remark fell into a lull in conversation,
the words painfully loud and noticeably slurred in the silence. I saw a few heads turn, and Anne glance at the stewardess with a nod that said, "Get his food over there before the whiskey."
"What were you doing there, then?"
I said, keeping my voice low, as if I could persuade him to moderate his tone by osmosis.
"Pictures for Harper's."
His plate arrived, and he began spearing foodstuffs at random, shoving the fragile architectural morsels into his mouth, seemingly without even tasting them.
"Some launch, I think. Can't remember. Christ!"
He looked down at his hand, the fork awkwardly balanced against the bandage.
"This is sodding painful. There's no way I'm trailing round Trondheim Cathedral tomorrow. I'm going to the doctor to get this checked out and get some decent painkillers."
After dinner, we took our coffee through to the lounge, and I found myself standing next to Owen White, both of us staring out of the long window into the fog. He nodded politely, but seemed in no hurry to open the conversation. I tried to think what Rowan would do. Charm him? Or brush him off and go and talk to someone of more immediate use to Velocity. Archer, perhaps. I glanced over my shoulder at Archer, and saw that he was very, very drunk, and had pinned Hanny into a corner of the room, her back to the window, his broad frame effectively blocking her exit. Hanny was holding a jug of coffee in one hand, and was smiling politely, but with a trace of wariness. She said something and gestured to the coffee pot, obviously as a way of taking her leave, but he laughed and put one heavy arm around her shoulders in a gesture of avuncular possession that made my flesh creep a little. Hanny said something else that I didn't catch, and then slipped out from under his grip with practiced dexterity. For a moment, Archer's face looked a mixture of foolishness and fury, but then he seemed to shrug it off and moved across to talk to Ben. I turned back to Owen White with a sigh, though I was not sure whether it was a sigh of relief for Hanny or resignation at my own reluctance to deal with unpleasant people, even for the sake of my career. Owen, by contrast, seemed reassuringly harmless, though I realized, as I looked covertly at his profile in the reflection of the dark and foggy window, that I had no real idea whether he would be of use to Velocity or not. Ben had said he was an investor, but White had kept himself to himself so much this voyage that I had no clear impression of what he actually did. Perhaps he would be the perfect angel investor for the group, if Velocity's owner ever decided to go into some more profitable area. In any case, I had no desire to go across to the other side of the room. "So, I began awkwardly. "I feel like we haven't been properly introduced. My name is Laura Blacklock. I'm a travel journalist."
"Owen White,"
he said simply, but there was no sense of dismissal in his tone. I got the impression that he was just a man of few words. He held out his hand, and I shook it clumsily with my left, which was holding a petit four, but seemed better than my right, which was holding a hot cup of coffee. "So, what brings you to the Aurora, Mr. White?"
"I work for an investment group," he said, and took a long sip of his coffee. "Bulmer was, I think, hoping I'd recommend the Aurora as an investment opportunity."
"But from what you were saying to Tina, that won't be the case?" I said cautiously, wondering if it was bad manners to admit overhearing, though I could hardly have helped it. He nodded, not seeming offended.
"That's so. I must admit, it's not really my area, but I was flattered to be asked and too venal to pass up the chance of a free trip. As I was saying to Tina, it's a shame Solberg couldn't make it."
"He was supposed to have cabin 10, wasn't he?" I asked. Owen White nodded. It occurred to me suddenly that I had no clear picture of who the missing Solberg was, or why he hadn't come. "Did you... I mean, do you know him? Solberg, I mean."
Yes, fairly well. We're in the same area. He's based in Norway, while my head office is back in London. But it's a small world that we operate in. One gets to know all one's competitors. It must be the same in travel journalism, I imagine.
He smiled as he popped a petit four in his mouth, and I smiled back, acknowledging the truth of his remark.
So, if this is more his cup of tea, why didn't he come? I asked.
Owen White said nothing, and for a moment I wondered if I'd gone too far, been too bald with my questioning. But then he swallowed, and I realized he was simply having trouble with his petit four.
There was a break-in,
he said around a mouthful of nuts, and swallowed again.
At his house, I believe. His passport was taken, but I think that was only part of the reason he didn't come. His wife and children were home, from what I understand, and were rather shaken up. And say what you will about Scandinavian businesses.
He paused again and swallowed, heroically this time.
They do understand the importance of putting family first. Dear me, I advise you not to try this nougat unless you have very good teeth. I think I may have loosened a filling.
Not the nougat,
I heard over my shoulder as I was trying to process what I had just been told. I turned to see Alexander bearing down on us both.
Owen, please tell me you haven't.
I did.
Owen took a gulp of coffee and swilled it around his mouth, wincing slightly.
To my regret.
The stuff should carry a dental health warning at the very least. You,
he pointed at me.
An investigative report is what's needed. Velocity's no punches pulled expose of Richard Bulmer's shady links with the cosmetic dentistry industry. What with that and the other incident, I should think future guests of this cruise liner will find it very hard to get health insurance, don't you?
Other incident? I said sharply, trying to remember what I'd told Alexander. I was sure I hadn't mentioned the full story of the accident to him. Had Lars related the conversation in the hot tub? What other incident are you talking about?
Why?
Alexander said, his eyes opening theatrically wide.
Cole's hand, of course. What were you thinking of?
After coffee, the group began to break up. Owen disappearing quietly without a goodbye, and Lars taking a loud leave with a joke about Chloe. Bulmer was still nowhere to be seen, nor was Anne.
Come for a snifter or something in the bar, Tina said to me as I placed my empty cup on a side table.
Alexander's going to have a tinkle on the baby grand in there.
I'm not sure, I said. I was still turning over what Owen White had told me over coffee about Solberg's break-in. What did it mean? I might turn in.
Ben?
Tina purred. He looked at me.
Hello? Want me to walk you back to your cabin?
No need. I'm fine, I said, and turned to go. I was almost at the door when I felt a hand catch at my wrist and turned. It was Ben.
Hey, he said quietly. What's going on? Ben?
I glanced behind him at the other guests, laughing and chatting obliviously as the stewards cleared up around them.
Let's not do this here. Nothing's going on.
Then why were you acting so weird all through dinner? You saw me saving you a chair and you deliberately ignored me.
Nothing's going on.
There was a painful pressure in my temples, as if the anger I'd been suppressing all night was taking its toll.
I don't believe you.
Come on, Lo, spit it out. You lied to me.
It burst out in a furious whisper before I could consider the wisdom of the accusation. Ben looked taken aback.
What? No, I didn't. Really?
I hissed.
So you never left the cabin when everyone was playing poker?
No!
It was his turn to glance over his shoulder now at the other guests. Tina was looking across at us, and he turned back, lowering his voice.
No, I didn't.
Oh. No, wait. I did go and get my wallet.
But that wasn't a lie.